Lumat présente.
Welcome to Textual Awakening, the podcast where we investigate and discuss the intersection between gender, sexuality, genre, and film history. I'm Emma Kretel.
And I'm Olivia Curry.
Hi, welcome back to Textual Awakenings. Last episode, we discussed the films of Anna Biller, Sexploitation, and the 50s American melodrama. So check that out if you're interested and haven't already.
Today, we're going to talk about the complexities of 80s and 90s psychosexual thrillers in terms of their post-women's liberation historical context and the dynamics of gender and sexuality that play out in these films. This week, we're also going to be talking about the male gaze a little bit, and I read a lot about the dynamics of spectatorship in these movies that we watch, which we should, I guess, list out to get some context of, like, what period and what we're talking about. We're talking about Basic Instinct, talking about Fatal Attraction, we're talking about Disclosure,
Body Heat, and Single White Female.
I'm really curious, because it's, like, a movie I really like. What did you think about Basic Instinct?
That was, okay, first of all, I've never seen, I just remember today, like, when I was a kid, mm-hmm. I saw China Syndrome with my dad, and then after that, I had never seen a Michael Douglas film ever again.
That's so probably, introduction. Honestly, the best. Like, and, in your formative years, not seeing any Michael Douglas movies.
And my first thought was, like, this is just a really filthy version of Vertigo.
Yeah, 100%.
And I was just like, oh my god, like, I couldn't handle it, and then the more I got into it, I was like, I can just enjoy this for not being, you know, like a formal masterpiece, but it's fun. It's interesting. So,
yeah.
And then I had a lot of fun with Fatal Attraction.
Yeah.
Disclosure was hilarious.
Disclosure is like the funniest movie ever made. And violently misogynist.
Oh yeah, movie for ever sure. Made. We're going to unpack that one later. Yeah. So.
All right. Which one should we talk about first?
Which one came out first?
Definitely Body Heat. That was one of the first psychosexual thrillers.
Okay, so why don't we start there then?
Yeah.
Very film noir.
Yeah, very neo-noir film noir, but kind of like starting to get a little bit more sexual, more so, dirtier. Yeah. This one I haven't seen in a long time, I'll be honest.
And I watched most of
it. But that's like where we're starting off.
What year did it come out?
1981.
Oh, okay. So it's way before the other one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I believe Fatal Attraction came out in the late 80s.
I think it's 87. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's 87. Mm-hmm.
The most interesting thing about the period that these psychosexual thrillers started being made was it was after like the women's liberation movement and like second wave feminism and stuff. So a lot of them, especially the Michael Douglas ones, almost read as like a backlash towards women's lib, even though they also seem like they're made for women. So it's all a very like weird dynamic for a lot of them.
Okay, I totally see that.
Yeah. Did you notice that in Body Heat?
In Body Heat, kind of. Mm-hmm. Definitely, like, I saw a pattern in all those movies of just having like this woman who is kind of strong because she is sexual, but it's like kind of a mix of her being evil and unable to be vulnerable, so she's kind of a sociopath, and it's just not a great depiction of women's sexuality at the end of the day. So that's
definitely
kind of what I gathered from it. But what about you?
I think the next one, Fatal Attraction, is like really interesting in terms of that like kind of dynamic, because Glenn Close plays like a career woman. Like, she has a job, she has a life. And she drops everything to try to, like, be in a relationship with Michael Douglas, basically. Mm-hmm. Which is insane.
I know.
You know?
Well, and also, did you read about the casting? I just read about that today. Okay, so basically, there was this whole scandal where they were not sure if they were going to cast Glenn Close because they weren't sure if she was attractive enough because Michael Douglas was like, oh, the woman we cast for My Wife was so attractive that they were like, who would possibly leave their wife for Glenn Close?
Yeah.
So. That's great, too.
Well, yeah, that's crazy. There's a lot of, like, I feel like drama and, like, scandalousness surrounding also the release of these movies, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, for
kind
sure.
Kind of plays into, like, kind of, I don't know, like some kind of Hollywood marketing thing, maybe. Like,
mm-hmm.
We'll get back to what changed in the conception of Basic Instinct and, like, how the plot was changed. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's super weird. To get some context of, like, the archetype that Michael Douglas plays, I was reading first Wikipedia. And then Wikipedia linked to the International Dictionary of Films and Filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the article on Michael Douglas.
Okay. I was also reading that Wikipedia page, yeah. But I don't know if we got to the same place.
Which the whole book is, like, on archive.com.
Right. Good plug.
Dictionary. Yeah, so the writer of his article said, like, this is a quote, the female characters in Fatal Attraction, Basic Instinct, and Disclosure are cutthroat villainesses, an anti-feminist fantasy of a man-eating monster. Poor Michael Douglas is the everyman who must contend with and be victimized by these women and their raging psychotic sexuality.
Yeah. And none of his films made that as clear as Disclosure did.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's not even, like, subtext. It's no. Just, like, they literally, it's in the dialogue.
Yeah, so. I think there's one part where, like, she's getting interviewed by the lawyer, and she's, mm-hmm. like, and she's, like, you have to, like, the UN has to supervise sex these days. Sometimes no means maybe. And he's just, like, wow, women can be as bad as men. Yeah. You know, like, he literally says that.
He's talking to someone, and he's like, you know, you women have your groups, you have this, we yeah. don't have that. You guys yeah. are lucky. And it was like, oh, damn, okay.
It's very, like, red pill. There's a lot of academic articles and stuff written about those three movies, Fatal Attraction, Basic Instinct, mm-hmm. and Disclosure. Like, it's almost like a spiritual trilogy kind yes. of thing of, like, crazy women who are obsessed with Michael Douglas. It's very, like, fascinating the different takes people have. Mm-hmm. Like, some academics are saying it's, like, misogyny with a thin veil of quasi-feminist rhetoric, which definitely Disclosure fits that bill.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. But there's also some that say, like, okay, the other, like, the counter reading that I find super interesting with these movies is that Michael Douglas is not actually the object of desire.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, he was kind of... He's kind of framed as that
yeah.
in the movie. Like, through the, like, style of the movie, he's, like, everybody's obsessed with Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
Because he's used in a lot of these movies as a tool. Like, a tool to gain something by these women.
You see that especially in Basic Instinct, yeah, I find.
Definitely.
It's, like, very clear. But mm-hmm. that's interesting for Fatal Attraction. Like, what do you think the tool is?
An article was actually talking about it. Text was talking about it, where, like, she's using him as a tool to be seen, because okay. like, it's, there's some, like, kind of counter reading where it's, like, this postmodern kind of take on the femme fatale and how her sexuality is never seen, kind of thing.
Mm.
Like, and she like pleads with him, like, she's like, I just want you to acknowledge me, basically, throughout the film. So she's like, she's using him as a tool to be seen and to be represented. Oh, she's not, yeah. She doesn't actually want him sexually and in a relationship. She just wants her desires to be seen, you know? Okay. So that was interesting. Yeah. I don't know if I totally agree with that, but yeah. I don't know. What do you
it's
think?
It's an interesting take. Because that's, mm-hmm. of the three of those films, that's mm-hmm. the only one where I would be a bit unsure
mm-hmm.
about that. But if it was anything, I'd say that would be the tool. I don't think yeah. there's really anything else it could be.
Yeah.
But
I think what also supports that is the fact that Michael Douglas in that movie is, like, super undesirable. He cheats on his wife.
Yeah.
Literally without a second thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't do anything to stop Glenn Close's kind of reign of terror on his life. He's not really successful at stopping it at all. It's his wife that ends up stopping it.
Yeah. The only time he really tries is mm-hmm. when he goes and asks for, like, professional legal advice.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just like, there's nothing you can do. And he's like, I guess there's nothing I can do. So.
Yeah. And he investigates her, too. He investigates her house.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the article I was reading talks a little bit about the investigation. Kind of connects it to, like, Hitchcock and, like, how, like, you know, Vertigo, he investigates her, and, like, that's kind of a part of, like, the noir format little bit, the investigation.
For sure.
But for him, it just leads to realizing that she's, like, sick, so it kind of leads nowhere for him.
Mm-hmm.
And when it should be, like, an kind of an I kind of lost my train of thought there.
But yeah, in the other movies, there are investigations too. Like, mm-hmm. we're going to be talking later about Single White Female.
Yeah.
And there that happens. It's very clear. Like, she goes into her roommate's room looking for information. Mm-hmm. Whatever the character's name is.
You know what? I'll look that up so yeah. we can say it. Because I also forget the actors' names. There's Jennifer Jason Leigh, and then...
it's, what's her name? Bridget Fonda.
Bridget Fonda, yeah.
Should I just say Bridget Fonda's character?
Yeah. yeah.
Bridget Fonda's mm-hmm. character goes into Jennifer Jason Leigh's room, and she goes through her closet, and every time... She goes through her closet a few times, and every time she does, she discovers something new.
Yeah.
And it kind of adds a lot to the plot.
Yeah. So that's... And also in Basic Instinct, he's obviously an investigator, so true, it's kind of built yeah. into the whole thing mm-hmm. of it. But his investigation ultimately doesn't lead him in the right place because he's being manipulated, you know, the whole time.
But he's also very rarely, like, actually into the investigation
That's
in
true.
That movie. He's yeah. really just interested in her. Like, yeah. he's barely ever investigating.
It's more like her investigating him, almost, mm-hmm. like, which is... I think, like, Sharon Stone in that movie, like, plays that part so well. And
I know.
It's, like, such, like, an interesting and, like, cool performance compared mm-hmm. to, like, a lot of these movies where the female, like, is acting crazy and, like, has yeah. a moment where she breaks down and, mm-hmm. like, goes insane. Like, she pretty much keeps it together, like, the whole entire time.
Yeah, she doesn't really have a breaking point.
No, she's, like, mm-hmm. completely, like, she's the object of desire, but she's also, like, always in control of the
yeah.
situation.
Like Which is what makes her scary.
Yeah, terrifying. Mm-hmm. What do you think about I'm just curious, like, what do you think about the ADR and all the, like, insanity of that movie? Like, I don't know, the dialogue and just, like, how crazy it is. Like, I feel like it's definitely on the crazy level. Like,
it is on the crazy level. Yeah. I feel like I watch, like, so many movies like that
yeah.
that I'm just, like... used to it to the yeah. point where I enjoy it. Like, it's never bugged me. If anything, mm-hmm. it brings me pleasure.
Yeah, no, I love it. Like, Paul sure. Verhoeven, the director, like, a lot of his movies are like that, where, like, mm-hmm. there's lots of, when people kiss, there's, like, so much ADR kissing sound effects mm-hmm. that it's, like, becomes disgusting.
Really? Okay, I didn't notice
yeah.
that.
I notice it in, like, all of his movies. Like, Showgirls, Total Recall, too.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed, like, insane ADR that just sounds, like, gross. And
really?
In Starship
okay.
Troopers.
Okay.
Like, to the point where, like, there's sounds in the room, but you can hear the kissing, like, louder than everything. Or, like, grunting, like, lots of noises,
oh
you know?
God.
Like, when they're at the dance club. This is, like,
yeah,
kind of
yeah.
a tangent, but, like, I don't know. I just think his, like, films, his style as a director
mm-hmm.
is, like, super... He does little things that kind of make his movies seem like a parody of Hollywood movies.
Okay,
which
yeah.
is why I really like his films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and the more, like, I got into Basic Instinct,
yeah.
the more, like, and I kind of just, like, let go of the idea that this is going to be, like, you know, like, a really
yeah.
great, perfectly written film. Like,
yeah.
the more it became enjoyable, because you could kind of tell it wasn't taking itself, like, super, super seriously.
Yeah, it's, like, almost, he has, like, kind of an irony in his movies
yeah.
that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the plots are always, like, super complex and interesting, too.
Yeah.
Did you notice, like, all the Hitchcock references in Basic Instinct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, like,
it's, like,
right
so
away,
on the nose.
Right away, I got, like, a Hitchcock kind of vibe from
yeah.
it, and then throughout the film, I'm like, okay, this is a direct
yeah.
reference. It's not just, like... But a lot of those films are a lot of, maybe not direct references, but it's so, like, you get so much out of it. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's so rare that I watch movies and I'm like, oh, that's like that. But
mm-hmm.
the entire time I was watching these, I'm like, oh, that's so Giallo. That's
yeah.
so film noir. That's so, what's that movie, the film noir movie that we always have to watch? It's like
the
classic.
Big Sleep?
No.
I know there's a woman in Basic Instinct who was in a lot of film noir movies.
Really?
In, like, the 50s. I'm going to look it up
right now. Oh, was it her friend there?
Yeah.
Okay,
the old lady.
Yeah. That was a weird...
Yeah.
That was weird. It felt unneeded, but I guess it was...
I think, like, the auxiliary female characters, like Roxy and her lover and
mm-hmm.
the older woman, like, are interesting in, like, almost a Freudian way, because it cements
yeah.
the theme of her, like, wanting to castrate, like...
Also,
like,
there's a lot of stuff that... Sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah,
there.
It's okay. No, but the... I'll just finish what I'm saying
mm-hmm.
so I don't forget.
Yeah.
the older woman and Roxy both have a history of killing their families.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, like, when Michael Douglas is talking to his friend, the, like, cowboy guy, who I forget his name, the other detective. Mm-hmm. The other detective says something along the lines of, like, she got jealous of her brothers getting all the attention, like, so she fixed them with daddy's razor. He says, like, something along those lines, which is, like, super Freudian. What were you saying?
Oh, yeah, okay. Roxy is also, like, a really interesting character, just because she brings about, like, this weird, like, I don't know, I found, like, Basic Instinct and Single White Female were, like, super homophobic at times.
Oh, yeah.
Like, crazy homophobic.
Crazy homophobic.
And it seemed like Single White Female could have been kind of influenced by Basic Instinct. It was definitely influenced by Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, there's, like, a lot of, like, in all these movies, like, they share, like, kind of a formal thing where it's, like, lots of shots of, like, interiors and the spaces that people occupy, which is super Hitchcockian, too. But
yeah.
And like, a lot of, and that goes into, like, the themes that, I forget what I was saying. But, yeah, they're all super homophobic. It's super, like, offensive for, towards people with, like, mental illness. Like, for example, like, the Glenn Close character supposedly is characterized by her behavior as, like, being bipolar. And also Glenn Close, there's a specific mental illness that she has, and I forget what it is, but Glenn Close interviewed, she, like, met with three different psychologists to try to, like, portray this. Like, everybody knows, like, a lot of the time people with mental illness do not, like, hurt other people. Like, they mainly just hurt themselves.
That's the problem. Did we talk about Midsommar ever?
I don't think so.
Did you see Midsommar?
Yeah, I saw it. Okay. I loved it.
I liked it, but then the beginning was so messed up.
Yeah, the beginning was incredibly
messed
up. Because
it's just like, oh, my sister's bipolar. She killed my entire family.
Yeah.
So that was similar.
And, yeah, it's like a little, I wasn't sure if at the beginning of Midsommar, like, she meant to poison the parents or if it was an accident.
I think she just did. I don't know.
She just did the whole
house. I feel
like
she did the whole house. Yeah. But,
because she had the, like, the thing taped to her face.
Yeah.
So it looked like maybe she was trying to, like, make the gas only go to her kind of thing.
I guess, yeah.
But I don't know. But super, like, yeah. The director of that, I forget his name. What's his name? Ari Aster?
Ari Aster, yeah.
Yeah, his philosophy when, like, making horror movies, he said, like, is to start with the most unimaginable thing and, like, get even more unimaginable, which I think is, like, it's so perfect in that movie, but it is, like, really, like, bad representation,
too. Yeah, of course.
Which, I don't know, a lot of movies that I like have bad representation, so it's something that's, like, interesting to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
It was Dorothy Malone.
Dorothy Malone, okay.
Was the old woman.
And
she was
I
on The Big Sleep.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, I've never seen The Big Sleep.
She was the femme fatale in The Big Sleep.
Okay, nice. Mm-hmm. Good to know. What else has she been in?
She was in Written on the Wind.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, just lots of kind of, she was in so many movies in the 40s. Oh my gosh.
Really?
Like 20 movies. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, wait, this is, I feel like we're being, like, super ADD with this episode.
Yeah, it's okay.
This is from Wikipedia.
Yeah.
The character of Alex Forrest has been discussed by psychiatrists and film experts and has been used as a film illustration for the condition borderline personality disorder, which is really messed up. That that's like, because I feel like that's not a great way to represent a personality disorder.
Yeah, absolutely not, you know?
I mean, even if it might be, like, at high levels somewhat accurate in some cases, like, to just kind of identify an entire personality disorder as, like, a villain.
Boil a bunny.
Yeah,
you know?
Bunny boiler.
Yeah. that's a term, like, used in the UK, like, slang term kind
that's
of thing.
Crazy that that movie, like, completely.
Wikipedia, I learned that.
Yeah. Me too. But, that's
what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, it's interesting to talk about the dynamics of sexuality in Basic Instinct, because the plot originally was with the script that Verhoeven had that he gave to Michael Douglas, like, it was completely different than the script that actually got made.
Really? How?
Yeah, because Michael Douglas was supposed to be bisexual. And the therapist character, played by Dream Triplehorn, she was supposed to be a man.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
oh, my God.
So, in the original movie that they had, like, I guess Roxy might have been in it, but the bisexuality and, like, the dangerous bisexuality mm-hmm. of the Sharon Stone character, Jean Tramiel? Tramiel?
Is it Catherine Tramiel?
Catherine Tramiel. Yeah. Yeah. She's, like, it's, like, less so, you know? Like, okay. She's not going after this girl she hooked up with in college. It's, like, a guy she hooked up with in college.
Okay, because that's what... I was gonna bring that up, too. Mm-hmm. Like, the weird bisexuality aspect that they bring in that makes her look more dangerous.
Yeah.
So... And, like, weirdly, I don't know, because there's, like, this promiscuity to it, that kind of... But I feel like if it had been portrayed with Michael Douglas, it would have been, like...
Like, super progressive for the time.
It would have been progressive. And then, instead, it's just, like, goes in the completely opposite direction with the final script. That's super interesting.
Mm-hmm. And he was supposed to show full frontal, but he didn't want
really?
It. Yeah, that too. That's just a little fun fact from the same article I was reading, but...
Oh, my God.
And, like, the... In terms of, like, using Michael Douglas as a tool, heterosexuality in Basic Instinct is super undermined because he's used as a tool of, like, lesbian revenge, almost. Like, he's not even an object of desire at all to Sharon Stone, which I think is, like, so, like, fascinating. It's such, such like, a multi-level movie for what it is.
And the way Sharon Stone talks about men, too, in the film, she's like, oh, are you seeing him? And she's like, no, I was fucking him.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, very much, you can tell that there's that separation there.
Yeah, it's not like Fatal Attraction where she's, like, almost, like, desperately wants to be in a relationship. It's like she desperately doesn't want to be in a relationship and doesn't want to fulfill the normal, like,
But she is also in a relationship. She is in a relationship. No. Isn't she in a relationship with Roxy, or did I...
She is, but, like, it's kind of super vague. It seems like Roxy's kind of, like, obsessed with her, too. Like, it doesn't seem like... They don't really act like a couple too much.
No, because from what I read in the film, they're, like, a couple, but it's almost like an open relationship, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, like, she's around, she's watching her have sex with men and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, like, to give someone permission to do that, you obviously have some kind of... like, trusting relationship, I'd assume.
But, yeah, totally. Yeah. But it's pretty, it's kind of, like, it's unclear.
Yeah.
More on the auxiliary characters in Basic Instinct. What did you think about his detective friend? The really, like, macho kind of weird guy.
I don't know if I have, like, fully formed thoughts on him, honestly. Like, I just remember feeling a lot when he was going... upstairs, and it's like he's gonna die, and I was like, oh. And then besides that, I don't know how much I really
felt he's like about kind his of character. A throwaway character, but what I think is like worth noting in the movie is like the sequence where they go to the club. He goes to the cowboy bar with his friend.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then he goes to the club, and it's like sort of a contrast of like super heterosexual, like, masculine. And this is kind of from in my sexual representation class, like, a few years ago, they talked about that sequence specifically,
really? Okay.
Which I thought was interesting. It was, like the cowboy bar representing, like, heteronormative roles, and then, like, the right path, even though it's kind of, like, his friend is super crazy towards him.
Yeah.
And then the club immediately after representing, like, kind of queer, like, nightlife. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, just showing those two things right next to each other. Like, they're both kind of stereotypes.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just sort of, like, an interesting little thing, you know?
Do you think that the club was set up to kind of look a little bit dangerous or a little bit more seedy?
I think definitely.
Okay, yeah, because it doesn't read like that now, obviously, but I wasn't around back then to view it, because there is just such a moral thing with all these films, where it's like, if you cheat on your wife, if you do this, you're going to get so messed up, you're going to get, like, your life's going to...
Yeah, it's going to turn into a horror movie.
If you just go outside of this, like, norm.
I just, like, I go off on Basic Instinct because it's, like, one of my favorite directors.
And like, the more you talk about it, though, the way more I can, like, there's stuff to read into it. That's super interesting.
It's like my Lord of the Rings, where if I'm sick, I just watch Basic Instinct.
Really? I love that. I'm going to have to watch it again after podcast.
Yeah, it's, like, definitely a rewatchable one, in my opinion. Let's talk Disclosure.
Yes. That movie had so many things that just had me, like, jaw open, like, yelling at my computer. It's so, I don't know, it's so dated. Like, I've never seen a film that dated, just in terms of technology.
Yeah.
But then just also, just the ideas, like, one of the craziest things I've ever seen is, you know, at the end, when his secretary comes up to him, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry about the things I said, because in an earlier scene, a lawyer asks his secretary if he's ever touched her in an inappropriate way, and she says, yes, he's rubbed my shoulders, or he's patted me on the butt or something. And then she brings it up to him after, and she's like, sorry for what I said, and he says, oh no, thank you for telling me. And then she just playfully taps him on the butt.
Yeah.
And it's like a weird playful thing, but it's like, what are you doing?
It's so weird. Also, because there's another level of, like, messed upness, where in real life, like, a couple years ago, Michael Douglas's ex-secretary said that he would, like, make lewd comments towards her, and she, like, wanted to wear, like, baggy clothes to work, because he would make, like, comments and stuff. So, like, I can see why being, like, a misogynistic, like, kind of messed up dude, like, reading that script, he'd want to do it.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Which is, like, the most, like, I don't know.
It's
the weirdest thing about it.
It's such a weird, it's so self-righteous and just really kind of gross and just not comfortable to watch. Just, I don't know. It's like, because obviously the points that are, like, being brought up, like, clearly, like, men do get sexually assaulted. It's a valid thing. But to kind of undermine everyone else, like, they consistently do in the film, is just, like, so insane.
It's so insane. It's like the thing of, like, the thinly veiled misogyny in the, like, quasi-feminist movie, because it's, like, they really do try to set it up as, like, this feminist, almost feminist thing where, like, they're, like, men can get assaulted too, like, women can be in power, like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But then, like, there's so much that where, like, if you, you know, have any, like, analytical kind of, like, knowledge of gender representation, like, it just looks, like, so bad.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's weird how, if we're talking about just historically, since Body Heat, how the female character has been portrayed, because it almost seems like she just becomes more and more of just a straight-up sociopath.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is crazy, so.
Yeah.
And how do you think that Michael Douglas's character has kind of changed and progressed over the course of those three films, seeing as this is the last one, right? It's the last of the three?
Disclosure.
Of the symbolic trilogy?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I think that in the first two, Michael Douglas is, like, he's like, put upon, but he has ways out of the situation.
Okay.
Like, he is kind of at fault,
you
know? Like, he's always a little bit at fault. And in Disclosure, which is why it's one of the reasons why it's so misogynistic, he is essentially, through its, like, through the film's ideology, he's forced to, like, to have sex with her.
Yeah.
You know? Like, his, you know, like, he says, they said their job is in danger, like, she's gonna blackmail him, like, he's gonna, like, ruin his relationship with his wife, but when it comes down to it, he did have sex with her, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he could have not, but within the context of the movie, he had to, you know? There's no other way that that weird sex scene could have ended besides them having sex.
No, exactly. But it's also weird, because it's, like, the way they framed it, it's really, it's, like, it's a rape scene, but then he gets, like, really, like, aggressive at some point. And just, like, weird to, I don't know even how to unpack that.
I was reading something about it, and they said it was, like, another, like, Freudian thing where it was, like, him, like, she was exerting agency and he was, like, being submissive, blah, blah, blah. And then to reaffirm the submissive woman and dominant man thing through, like, that got subverted through the first part of the sex scene, he had to have sex with her for it to balance out again. kind of thing. Which, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
I don't know how I stand on that.
Yeah, it's like,
I gotta think about that one.
It's definitely, the movie has its own logic to it.
Yeah.
That is definitely not my logic, or hopefully anyone's, any human's logic, you know?
I agree.
And I think it's also interesting, that movie, how it sees the future. Like, it's almost like one of those movies from the 50s where it's, like, showing you the future, and you're like, that's not what it's like
in
2019. Because, like, they have the whole VR thing, and it's like, you know, in the future we have VR where you can put files in a cabinet, and... like, and CD women, ROM. Like, are sexually assaulting men, you know? Like,
yeah, it's true. Yeah. And also, no one was talking about it in the early reviews I read.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, because I was just looking it up at some point, and let me see, disclosure film. Yeah, I just remember, especially Roger Ebert's, his review was really weird for it.
Because
I didn't read it like this at all. He said, hold on. Disclosure contains an inspiring, terrific shot of Demi Moore's cleavage in a wonder bra, surrounded by 125 minutes of pure goofiness leading up to and resulting in this moment.
What is the moment? It happens, like, really early towards the start of the film.
That's why I'm confused.
Yeah.
Because also...
I feel like you didn't watch it.
No, I know, because the thing
is... Sorry, Roger Ebert.
I read that before.
Yeah.
And then I was just assuming that it was just going to be, like... all Demi Moore naked, and it's literally just, like, that one scene.
Yeah.
And it's really not, like, as much of, like, a sex thriller as, like, the other ones. So it's just, like, really...
No, but it's almost, like, terrifying only if you're, like, a misogynist. You know what I mean? The movie itself is not as scary as Single White Female, you know?
No.
Or as thrilling, you know, as Basic Instinct. Mm-hmm. It's, like, really kind of almost boring.
It's boring and silly at the same time, as I describe it. But it's like, I don't know, I feel like if it didn't have those just wild, out-of-nowhere ideas and just, like, all that CD-ROM stuff that's kind of funny, like, I don't know who would watch it.
Yeah, it's... I think maybe they paid Roger Ebert to say, like, there's a bra shot, you know, so people go see it.
Exactly.
Honestly. I don't know. So, yeah, that's definitely a weird review. I was reading a review of Fatal Attraction that was saying, like, or I was reading about Fatal Attraction. They were talking about a review of it. I wasn't actually reading the review. Mm-hmm. That was, like, saying that a lot of magazines and stuff were praising it for showing the, like, what can happen when you are an adulterer and stuff like that. Like, which is just... I don't know. It's crazy that anyone ever praised that movie, besides for its, like, entertainment value.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
And, like, closest performance.
It's scary.
Yeah.
It's not, like, scary.
Yeah.
It's, like, there's... I feel like, also, like, in the 80s, too, it would have been, like, a lot scarier. Because, like, the end scene technically is quite scary, you know, with, like, the bathtub or, like, coming out at the end and stuff, but...
Right, she gets shot and drowned, yeah.
No, but she gets shot... after, because he drowns her in the bathtub, he strangles her.
And then she comes to life.
And then she comes to life somehow, after being underwater for, like, 3 minutes, and then, yeah.
Yeah, and also there's an interesting thing in what I was reading about, like, back to Mulvey. We talked about it a bunch last episode, but how she talks about if you're a woman watching a film that uses the male gaze, which is most movies, you are either, like, a masochist putting yourself in the woman's shoes, or... you're, like, complicit in, like, the male gaze or something.
Yeah, because it puts you in the...
Yeah, or you can identify with the man, basically, is what she said.
Yeah, you get kind of put in the point of, like, power, though, too, because that's how she kind of identifies it, I guess. Yeah.
And, like, they were saying, like, that a lot of the women in these movies commit, like, kind of masochistic or sadomasochistic acts. Like, Glenn Close, like, slashing her legs, you know, could, like, kind of be read as she is masochistic, trying to, like, fit into this role of, like, heteronormativity when she, like, is she's going about it in, like, a weird way, but, like, you know what I mean?
I get that. I'm trying to relate that kind of to see if there's any link to Single White Female.
Yeah.
In any way, I'm trying to...
Single White Female, like, even just the name is so dated. Like, she puts a white in the ad for finding a roommate, you know?
And then the title of the book is Single White Female Seeking Same.
Yeah, that's... She reads out the ad in the movie and it's...
Oh,
like,
does she? Okay,
yeah. I think she says, like, seeking same.
After, yeah, after three of those movies, mm-hmm. everything kind of blended together.
Yeah, so. Understandable. And yeah. there's also, like, because more movies in the 80s and 90s, I feel like they were starting to deal with more with, like, mental health in a, not realistic, but, like, trying to be a realistic way,
yeah.
you know? And showing that you can fit the image of, like, a single white female, which is, like, supposedly super normal, you know, but you can be, like, this crazy, like, you know.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is what a lot of them are. It's using, like, the mask of femininity,
mm-hmm.
but there's something underneath that is sinister.
And it's weird, too, because I feel like the Allie, the main character,
mm-hmm.
what's the, her name's Hedy, right? Or Hendra?
I'm on the IMDb right now. Hedra.
Hedra, yeah. So, it's weird because at the end of Single White Female, mm-hmm. She, Allie is like, oh, you know, I forgive you for everything you did. You mm-hmm. weren't yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of like, okay, are they going to talk about, because she knows she's really mentally ill at this point.
Yeah.
And then Hendra just comes back with, no, I was you. And it's kind of like, weird. But Single White Female is another film with the kind of scary lesbian.
Yeah.
Undertones.
For sure.
Very troubling.
Yeah. But. And it's like super, it's like scary lesbian, and it's also like a lesbian or an other, like an other being like a sexual female or like mm-hmm. female deviant, like trying to impose herself on like a heterosexual relationship.
Yeah. You know?
And if it's like to steal the man or to steal the woman, mm-hmm. like, it's still, like, you know, trying to wedge herself in there.
Yeah.
And, like, disrupt it in some kind of way. Which is seen as, like, not the main reason why she's a villain, but, like, is really...
It's up there.
Definitely up there, yeah. Mm-hmm. How about that haircut?
The haircut? You know what? I really liked it
yeah.
on, what's on Bridget Fonda?
Yeah. It looks good. Weirdly looks good. You know what I mean?
It looks really good yeah. on her, but the thing is, it looks really bad on Jennifer Jason Leigh, I yeah. found. Did you? Because they look really similar, but it just, like, suits one of them so well.
Yeah. I think it might be because we see Jennifer Jason Leigh with different hair, you know, and then she goes okay, to it, yeah, and you're yeah. like, whoa, you know?
Too much, yeah.
This is a very intense haircut.
Yeah, but it's stylish. It's yeah. nice. It works, so.
It's New York.
It is. It's very New York, yes.
Oh, no. Yeah, Michael Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting to look at him, like, as a leading man as compared to Kirk Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
Because Kirk Douglas, like, I was reading also his section of the International Dictionary of Films and Filmmakers. And
okay.
it was saying, like, he embodies, like, the strong, steadfast American male who always knows, like, what to do, like, what to say in any situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Michael Douglas kind of, like, it's interesting how he's also a leading man, but he's kind of the opposite of that, where he
yeah.
doesn't know what to do. He's always being taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of is, like, I think, symptomatic of, like, the times and, like, the feminist movement.
Yeah.
Like, kind of Hollywood's backlash against feminism.
Basically. And, like, this castration anxiety.
Yeah.
For sure. So.
I just think the sexual dynamics in those movies are super fascinating, especially mm-hmm. coming off of the tail end of, like, the studio system and, like, the feminist liberation movement and all of these, you know, laws regarding, like, what you can show in movies changing.
Yeah.
And how that reflects in these films.
Yeah, it's not too talked about in mm-hmm. Film history, is it?
Yeah, the 80s, we like to forget about the 80s, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's like a different, because it even links to Viva, which we talked about last mm-hmm. week, where Anna Biller is kind of facing the sexual revolution kind of head on. But this mm-hmm. is so interesting because it's just actually, we're watching how that unfolds throughout history through these at
yeah.
least these three films and
yeah.
all of them kind of.
I mean, we definitely, like, through movies, society wants to portray itself as, like, always moving forward and always becoming better.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in reality, there's lots of, like, kind of one step forward, two step back situations
yeah.
that definitely are shown in films like Disclosure.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other psychosexual thrillers that you would see as being important in that era? not, well, I mean, I'm sure there are other important ones, but are there any, like, really significant ones that you would recommend, suggest next?
I'm, like, super bad at thinking of movies on the spot sometimes, but
and that is okay.
I am on IMDb right now.
Because, yeah, I was reading, because I didn't realize, like, I guess it makes sense, but Psycho is considered a psychosexual thriller?
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense. I never saw it that way. Like, Eyes Wide Shut, huh?
Yeah, Eyes Wide Shut, totally. Mm-hmm. That's a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at top 50 psychosexual thrillers. Oh, Black Swan, apparently.
Really? Okay, that makes sense. And it's weird.
Blue Velvet, that's on the better end. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're making, like,
the quality
judgments, like, it's better.
Blue Velvet? Never mind.
Persona, which I haven't seen.
Oh, yeah, okay, and it's weird because it all makes sense, kind of, if you take all these films and kind of put them in order of when they came out, you can just see, like, a similar message coming out, but the dynamics kind of changing and what we're able to show, because Persona definitely has that, and Psycho definitely has that, but a lot of it is just in the subtext.
Yeah,
and just
absolutely.
In what we can't see, which people have to study, but then, like, you know, Basic Instinct... To an extent, Eyes Wide Shut, Black Swan.
Basic Instinct is, to circle back, like, I think the first or second time I watched it, when, at that point, I'd seen a lot of film noirs in school, I realized, like, how similar the plot is to a lot of those movies, but the subtext becomes the text. Like, all the sex that happens in the movie, you see it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not like you just see, like, a cigarette next to a bed after. Yeah. It's, like, the first scene in Basic Instinct, so.
Yeah, but it also has those, like, it's not like a horror movie that deals with, like, fears and, like, repressed fears that are really primal. It almost, like, I feel like the psychosexual thriller genre is more reacting to, like, anxieties, societal anxiety rather than societal trauma. You know?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because everything's pretty on the... I don't see much repression there. Unless it's from, like, sometimes, like... I guess we're talking about Basic Instinct. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about his detective partner, there might be some repression on that end. But for the most part,
I think, like, his partner, like, also kind of... he also highlights how Michael Douglas doesn't fit the ideal of, like, a super masculine man in it, because his partner's, like, the masculine man, and he's, like, kind of in between these two worlds kind of thing,
Oh, the movie would have been so much more interesting if he was bisexual. I'm thinking about
it's a crime.
Now. The end would have been so thrilling.
Like, if she was trying to frame the therapist as sort of like a Norman Bates character that was wearing a wig killing people.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it would have been so cool.
Too bad. Someone needs to remake it.
Yes.
Or not. But,
please. I know. I want it. Yeah. I want Paul Verhoeven remake it. He's still alive, so do it. You know?
Make the... Yeah.
Stop making, like, good movies. Go back to when you were making, like, weird movies in the 90s.
But he has to cast Michael Douglas again.
Yes.
He identifies as a liberal, but it's kind of like one of those, like, weird liberals who kind of has, like, I don't know if his views have really aged well. I feel like his views have kind of stayed the same since the 80s.
Definitely.
So he doesn't really seem all that progressive, but I wonder, because, like, you look back at the politics in those movies, and you wonder, like, do you think, I guess they were kind of progressive for then, maybe,
in
some ways?
They were progressive in some ways, but also... really not in other ways.
No.
It's kind of like that thing where Hollywood will make a movie and talk about something that's taboo or something that's, like, an issue that's on people's minds, but at the end of the film, it'll always, like, be, like, going back to the normal, going back to, like, the heteronormative.
Very Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, why Silence of the Lambs like that? I haven't read it all about Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, really?
But I love
okay,
that
Silence
movie.
Of the Lambs, because, the villain in that is trans, and then the way they describe that is so weird and just really bad. And so it's an interesting film because they kind of demonize the character, but then also explain,
like his psychological state.
Yeah, because they're trying to explain, like, oh, he's transgender, and that means he's, like, sexually attracted to this and this. And it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. The complex of the female gaze and the complex of gazes, like, kind of being super archaic in these movies and, like, being, like, a really, like, at the end of the day, like, really negative message in terms of how gender is related to sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sexuality and gender are totally different.
Exactly,
things.
Yeah.
And in these movies, they're, like, put together as one and the same, and one, like, has a direct effect on the other, and any deviance from your gender will, like, affect how you are sexually. Which,
Well, and that's why, I don't know, it's kind of like, not everything I feel needs to be that Freudian.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people take everything and make it so Freudian, it's kind of like, I don't know.
I feel like they're kind of doing it to themselves, these movies, though, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's, like, so overt that it's kind of, like, relax.
Okay, thanks for listening. The films we talked about this week were Basic Instinct, Body Heat, Single White Female, Disclosure, Fatal Attractions.
So next time we're going to be contextualizing the rape revenge film in the era of the Me Too movement, so be sure to tune in for that.
Bye!
Zoom out.